Are you a military-industrial complex corporate crony hoping to get an AI makeover? Well, don't you worry. Palantir's here for you. The news is all about Palantir this week, and we're going to be diving into Palantir and all the news about it. If you want to see your carnage and your spying on American citizens beautifully visualized, you should use Palantir.
It's better than those other trashy rags, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Far better.
Welcome to Human Reaction. My name is David Rand. I'm here with my co-host, Kyle Mack. Hey. Kyle, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
He's fantastic.
Let's play the thing. If you want to support the show, comments. Leave a comment down below. Tell us, is Palantir your favorite military-industrial complex company? Personally, they're mine.
They're definitely Kyle's. We're going to be digging into it.
I like them better than a lot of the other ones.
Well, everyone was talking about it out of nowhere, and I was like, where did this come from? Why is everyone talking about this?
The New York Times and their propaganda.
New York Times came out with an article, and it is ridiculous. It's one of the best examples of wagging the dog we've seen in a little while. Mm-hmm. What do I mean by wagging the dog? I mean, you're trying to create a response by reporting on nothing, functionally. Now, that doesn't mean Palantir isn't a company worth discussing. We're going to dig into that. But the article itself is a giant nothing burger based on nothing. It's pure speculation.
Yeah, you'll see Trump taps Palantir to compile data on Americans. Oh, yeah, there's them wanting me to sign up.
Get out of here.
You get the point.
Well, the New Republic had a non-paywalled version of it.
Yeah.
Wanted to look at that because there we go. That's the intercept.
There we go.
Yeah.
Go down a little bit.
They're
tapping down Palantir to create master database on every American. Trump's dystopian path is already underway.
Yeah.
This is how they're discussing about it.
And this is interesting. Oh, no, this is just a summary.
Yeah, that's their summary.
Okay, so in the article, I'm going to read it real quick, just this introductory part, because I think it's really important to demonstrate the media misdirection here. It says, in March, President Trump signed an executive order calling for the federal government to share data across agencies, raising questions whether he might compile a master list of personal information on Americans that could give him untold surveillance power. They're not concerned about the surveillance power.
They're concerned who might have surveillance power.
They're concerned that a company might do it well and that Trump would be in presidency when it happened.
Well, this is the annoying thing about, because it plays on the fears that people have. Palantir is a company that we're like supposed to hate, you know, like they're one of those things where everybody tells you you're supposed to hate them. So everybody just starts hating them without actually knowing what their role in this whole apparatus is. Because if I go on Twitter right now and I just search Palantir, what I will be getting across the board is just like, they're collecting everybody's data. Mm-hmm. Palantir's not a data collection service. That's not what their role is. What they do is that they are a software company that compiles data and makes it easier for people, for like siloed data, to operate and communicate with each other. Right. So like, could you, in theory, create a database that puts all of America's information together? So it's not like the IRS has this bit of information, the HHS has this bit of information, whatever. Yeah. But it's kind of like, it's also partially the point where it's like what we were finding with Doge. And if we look back at the Jesse Waters interview with Doge and with all the Doge employees and everything, the biggest struggle they had was none of the systems were communicating with each other. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you have a bunch of credit cards over here. You have a bunch of credit cards over here. Everybody's like taking money out of the pie. Nobody's communicating. Nobody's getting the same accurate information. It's like we're living in like the 80s level of computer era. And meanwhile, what Trump's trying to do with Palantir is like, hey, update our systems. Update our IT work.
Wait, and specifically for fraud. I mean, that's the best case. That's the steel man of the opposition here. Is they want to make sure that you can't defraud the federal government by having a combined, cohesive SaaS system for the American public.
You can't commit like arbitrage fraud between systems because the systems aren't communicating well.
Exactly, right? Yes. And of course, you just bring to mind, everybody just remember for a minute, the cave, the Social Security cave, right? And that's the system we're talking about. We're saying we're going to update that. And Palantir is going to play a role, purportedly, according to the anonymous sources in the New York Times article, in unifying these things together. That's the news part of it, is that they got some people off you know, off the record to say that Palantir is playing some role in the administration in unifying the system so that the administrators can get a cohesive whole of the American public on individual profiles so that when you're looking at IRS tax fraud, you also have your Medicaid information and you have your Social Security information all in one place. And it does the same thing they did with Doge, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, they might be able to edit it. You don't know. You know?
Or it's like, now Elon's going to have all of your Social Security numbers. Like, that's the way that they tried to play
it. You'll be able to steal your data. But it's like, this... You gave me the number. Like, you gave me the number when I was born. It's called the Social Security number.
The government already has the Social Security
exactly.
number.
Exactly. Right, it's just in a cave, and they're trying to put it online. Okay, so Palantir responded to it, and let's get into that.
They said the recently published article by the New York Times is blatantly untrue. Palantir never collects data to unlawfully surveil Americans, and our Foundry platform employs granular security protections. If the facts were on its side, the New York Times would not have needed to twist the truth. What they mean by granular security systems is like a robust permission system. So it's like, you have access to this data. This person does not have access to this data.
Yeah.
And so it's like a permission system of like, people get tagged and it's like, this is what they're allowed to see. This is what they're not allowed to see. Like,
right.
That's what they mean by that.
Typical in corporations yeah. all the time, all over the place, like yes. different levels of authority. In fact, already typical in the government and covert intelligence stuff when it comes to all kinds of things within the government. They already have these systems.
Well, it's also just so like rogue employees aren't just going and stealing people's Social Security numbers.
Yeah.
Like that helps with that. Like,
also,
is a privacy
updating
thing.
The systems makes that less likely because then yes. you can actually monitor users and their activities and then flag for that. That's also what these systems do. Mm-hmm. Now, is this a true tweet? Kind of, but not really. because Palantir works with the NSA, yes, they have access to unlawfully surveilled American information, although it isn't. It's kind of a legal gray space because, you know, I think it's unlawful because of the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment.
The important thing here is that they're not the ones collecting the data.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the thing here.
Yeah.
Because this is the problem where if I'm just gazing Twitter, I just type in Palantir into the search bar, you're going to have tons of people just saying they're collecting people's data. That's yep. not what Palantir's role in this. Now, you can disagree with Palantir's involvement in this. It's just like, get it right. Like yeah. that's what I'm saying.
And to clarify, right? what it is that they are a contractor with the NSA as of 2008 to 2013 at minimum. That's the era in which we know about them. In that era, they were the ones who were put into charge, according to The Intercept, of trying to make sense of the X Key Score program. X Key Score is one of the programs that just sign up, Kyle. Just put your email in there. I'm just kidding. X Key Score is one of the programs that Snowden revealed in the NSA leaks. It is one of the big dragnets sweeping up.
Now they want me to give them $100. What the fuck? God,
come on, Intercept.
All these newspapers just gotta like abolish newspapers. Like they're not useful anymore.
Well, this is some good original reporting from the Intercept from 2017, where it talks about how Palantir played a critical role in the NSA actually putting X Key Score program data into like use so that analysts could actually understand all the information they were getting because it swept up so much information that analysts weren't really empowered to make decisions about it. It was just an overwhelming amount of information. So their algorithms at the time, probably AI now, was instrumental in actually enabling the worst things that the NSA did. So to the degree to which what they're talking about is Palantir is a facilitator of government programs I don't like, understandable. But that's like kind of like the center left view of these companies, right? It's like the company's the problem, like blaming Boeing for the war in Iraq isn't the right way to think about it.
I'll just blame
because
them
they
for
sold
their,
the planes.
I'll just blame them for their shitty planes.
Yeah, right.
That's what you blame
Boeing for. Or blaming Halliburton or whatever. Even though Halliburton has lots of CIA ties, and that's good. That's a big story. But it's a framing that lends itself into the leftist worldview that this is actually really about the corporations when it's actually really about the government policy and the corporations are just along for the ride.
Well, I just want, because this Intercept article is written in 2017, and it's just funny how it starts out with Donald Trump has inherited the most powerful machine for spying ever devised. It's like, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, the machine was there before he got it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, it is saying inherited. And to be fair, The Intercept and this reporter that reported on it is consistently skeptical of the surveillance. Let me
finish the next sentence. How this petty, vengeful man might wield and expand sprawling American spy apparatus. It's like, it's the framing of
yeah,
it. You know,
right,
like
that's right.
The
oh, yeah, totally.
It's the framing
that's,
of it.
And that's, just like, that's always my curse in dealing with this, because all the best people on this are always super lefties. And so, they gave Obama a hard time about this, and they gave, you know, all the presidents a hard time about
this.
But they got to be extra.
I'm sure The Intercept gave Obama a hard time about
it. But they always have to signal how much they hate Trump at the top of it. So.
Well, especially this was in 2017. This was peak yes. derangement, right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. It's just kind of funny.
But this
everything's
is actually,
always laced with that.
This is really well sourced, too. This is actually a leaked document about the pitch that the NSA, that the Palantir gave to get the contract with the NSA at the time. It's really interesting. Definitely a high recommend read. So, but like you said, the hypocrisy's there, because the Democrats are very concerned about surveillance now, Kyle.
Well, yeah, because I got a tweet just from the Democratic Party, so I'll pull that up. I wouldn't recommend.
Why
ever.
Do you sound?
I wouldn't recommend ever looking at the Democratic Party's Twitter account. But I'm sorry I have to put people through this. But new, the Trump administration has contracted the tech firm Palantir to create a national citizen database that would track your private data. Welcome to the Trump deep state.
Oh, wow. Like, they really like, owned them there.
We're like, the Democrats are now concerned about surveillance. They're now concerned about a deep state. Like, they're trying to flip the words on their head. It's just, it's...
Were they not concerned when...
No.
Biden gave new defense contracts, renewing new defense contracts his entire time at, you know, in office?
I mean...
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Biden gave Palantir various contracts, like, in regards to, like, the Titan targeting system and things like that.
Including renewing ICE. ICE.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that everyone hates now on the left? ICE. It just goes to show,
it's not about what's being done. It's about who gets the contracts.
Exactly.
And that's really the framing that I want to lay out here is you're supposed to hate Palantir. The system wants you to hate Palantir. But then they don't look at, like, okay, Palantir gets their market cap and their revenue is actually not that big compared to most people in the military industrial complex. And then you'll look at anybody else that'll be like $10, $20 billion more in revenue than Palantir gets. Nobody talks about those.
Yeah.
Right, right?
Well,
like that's the issue, right?
So like the Democrats don't, I mean, The Intercept will, but the Democrats don't. So you got to distinguish between a liberal or a progressive and one of the new leftists.
The zeitgeist.
Right? The leftists.
Like, I mean, the zeitgeist.
Right.
It's
right.
like who you're supposed
picture.
To.
Right. And the New York Times has not exactly been consistent on this issue, although I don't know about those individual reporters. So to give you a sense of this, just like how hypocritical this is, the Bush administration really incubated Palantir, gave its first CIA contract, which we'll dig into, early intelligence integration with mostly the defense industry. Obama hired Palantir to do stimulus fraud. Remember this Obama stimulus checks? Yeah, they hired Palantir to look through Americans' data to discover who was maybe doing fraud. He's the first one to hire Palantir to advise ICE. Mm-hmm. You know, the bad guys that everyone hates right now, that was Obama. So if you're really upset about that, you should talk to Obama about that. Department of Homeland Security, Obama. First time Palantir got a contract with Department of Homeland Security was under Obama. Military expansion, all the diplomacy 2.0 stuff, that's all Obama. Now, Trump did it too. He also did more ICE stuff, a new national database, Project Maven, the Department of Homeland Defense, Defense AI. That's all Trump won. But Biden then went on and did even more. Or not did any more, but he went back to pretty much Obama levels of hundreds of millions of dollars. So Trump probably spent about $2 billion, almost $3 billion on Palantir during his tenure. But the others are giving hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to Palantir.
I think the important thing with all this is just to understand, like, there's different factions in this military-industrial complex game, and different ones are at work. Different ones have different ideologies. Everybody's kind of getting this contract or that contract, though. Like, you know, there's still kind of a market process of, like, you know, who has the best system or relatively close to the best system so that the contract can go out to them. And Palantir has proven themselves as being somebody that's really good at this data analysis, data management game.
Yeah.
They're not data brokers. like, I want to make that clear again, because people don't understand that and people keep saying that. but the example that you brought was stimulus fraud. Like, that is a perfectly reasonable government contract to me to be like,
sure,
hey, let's stop fraud, which is kind of what is happening here it's like, let's stop fraud. Let's make sure the systems talk to one another. Right?
But it's a problem because Trump's doing it. Exactly. That's the thing that drives me crazy
about it. And now Peter is going to have your social security number or your tax identification
number. He's going to be like calling up social security with an Indian accent, be like, hey, I would like to get my social security check realigned to a new address. You know, really going to do that? No. No, he's Peter Thiel's got billions of dollars. He's not going to do that.
Well, and he's also like, he doesn't want to commit fraud to the system because that'll cause problems from a market perspective of like, he's not going to be able to continue getting those contracts.
Yeah, he'll lose more money by getting a controversy than he would otherwise.
If he was to just like start stealing everything, which I don't think would, like, again, all Palantir is a data management software.
Yep.
Like, it's a software that the government takes and installs and uses for their programs.
You know,
like,
you know who else sells software to the government? Microsoft.
Yes. Or Amazon or Google. They all provide and they get way more money in government contracts than Palantir does.
Yes.
Like that's the thing where it's like, that's where I really want to like drill in the point of like, for some reason right now, we're really supposed to hate Peter and Elon, which is an interesting thing too, is because like the company's history is, if you've ever heard the term PayPal Mafia, it's referring back to the original starters, the original founders of PayPal. Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, David Sachs, who's the current AI and crypto czar, Reid Hoffman, who is actually like a super lefty liberal, who's like completely opposed to Peter and Elon and stuff right now. Like, there's an interesting dynamic. Epstein Island goer, former CEO and founder of LinkedIn.
He's just into science, Kyle.
He's really into science. Yeah. So like this is a big kind of Silicon Valley, you know, tech group that came up together, and they're called the PayPal Mafia. And now a lot of them have gone off to do their own things, but you know, there's still a network, right?
Right. I mean, there's an informal network that you would see amongst any group of people who've done a thing together.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Where and so Peter, he also has all these other companies that are all named off of Tolkien ideas. Mithril Capital, which is where J.D. Vance used to work.
Yeah, that's his
his venture firm.
Venture firm. And Palantir is in The Lord of the Rings. It's that orb that that can see
the
through
all-seeing either. Eye.
Yeah, they also can see through, and you can communicate through it, and you can see the future even a little bit with
it.
Yeah.
Mithril is
the armor.
Yeah. Exactly. So you see this network that's kind of forming around Trump. Trump has courted a lot of the people from this network who are very right-wing, libertarian, or like moderate left Trump aligned.
Yeah.
Like he's courted a lot of those people.
Yeah. So Peter Thiel afterwards, he goes on to found Palantir with a couple other guys, including bringing in his, a guy that we'll get into, the CEO, is his former college roommate. He's got a whole story, but about four or five other guys that he founds this with. And what he does is he takes on a very unique tact with this, which is disrupting an industry that is not very zero to one, but kind of is. In the past, in the early 2000s, you did have companies who were like traditional military industrial complex companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, folks like that, doing the kind of data analysis for the Pentagon as contractors. And he came in with the, you know, Palo Alto kind of break stuff and figure things out and outcompeted them for initial government contracts that then launched the company. So obviously, one of the themes here is like, is that a good thing, right? Underneath that is like, are the new leaders better than the old leaders, right? Would you rather have Palantir doing this or Lockheed Martin or Raytheon? Who would you have do that? That's an interesting question that people should be discussing, right? And that's worth time. The New York Times article, not worth time. It's pure speculation, wagging the dog. But the actual discussion of what is Palantir and what's its role in our society is an important one. To get you a little bit about Palantir, though, and where it comes from. They were founded off an initial grant of $2 million from InQtel. We've talked about InQtel before.
They're the CIA's like a venture capital firm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's your tax dollars help start Palantir. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. in Qtel. So that,
which is how a lot of things in the tech world actually go. Like, now whether or not that's how it should work, you know, is another question. But anything kind of in the military space, data analysis space, like things that really military operations need for advancement of technology, that is kind of what in Qtel is supposed to seed and help fund the R&D of, to guide it in a direction of what like the military itself needs. That's,
so
that's the design philosophy of this system.
If you're a millennial or a Gen Xer, you will remember the early 2000s, and the view of Silicon Valley was very anti-government. It was more libertarian, kind of crypto liberal, all that kind of stuff. It was, let me finish the statement. Kyle.
Yeah.
Just give me a minute. I'm cooking here. Let me flip the omelet over.
I feel like it was like Peter was the libertarian and like nobody else.
No. In general, the philosophy is we avoid DC. It was Microsoft was the first one to go to DC in the late 90s after they had a monopoly lawsuit brought against them. And then they became one of the biggest lobbyists in DC. Yeah, at late 90s, early 2000s, that was the general impression. Now, we now know because of Surveillance Valley and other works of investigative reporters looking back that, in fact, Intel, DARPA, organizations like that, InQtel and DARPA, things like that, were instrumental in the rise of Silicon Valley in many ways. There's Navy intelligence. A whole bunch of those are critical in the formulation of a lot of those companies that ended up serving a lot of needs for the military, even as their initial product offerings were for the general public.
Yeah, because to be specific, it's not like the libertarian label on that is not exactly accurate to me. It's kind of like a hippie libertarianism. Like it's
there's like a very
like a very progressive Berkeley style libertarianism.
Kind of. I mean, there was definitely an F the government sort of like, we're going to just do stuff and not ask for permission. Uber, for example, is a great example of that. They just go into areas, violate the law until they can get the law changed. That sort of philosophy was everywhere, and it was unique for a company to be outright, our job is to go get government contracts. That was like a dead end for Silicon Valley. It was like the one place you didn't compete. Palantir kind of flipped that on its head and went and did that. Now they did that with what was not known at the time, a very obvious end with the government, which is InQtel funding. The CIA was its lone customer from 2005 to 2008.
They were the first ones to flip that on its head. That doesn't seem right to me.
With, in the sense of like, they were a startup company.
I'm thinking about of like the Google, like as a startup company,
yes.
I guess.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, like, I'm thinking like back to Google, the Google DARPA days, which was like early 90s.
But once again, like that, right? This was at the time they were pitching themselves as that, which was what made them a unique company and so controversial. I'm trying to describe the way it was felt at the time. We now know that a lot of those companies had those kind of connections.
Yeah, everybody just had them. This was the one that got like seed funding, but like everybody else was just like already kind of in the soup.
You're exactly right. There's an underlying hypocrisy to the entire thing, right? Because at the same time, Google's like collaborating on diplomacy 2.0 and saying, how dare Palantir, they're not, what was Google's old thing, like don't be evil
was their slogan.
Well, that was like, don't serve the interests of
they stopped with that in like 2018 or something.
Interestingly timed.
It's kind of a weird time.
So
evil's cool now.
Some of their first advisors was Condoleezza Rice, right, former Secretary of State, and former CIA Director George Tenet.
There's another aspect of this, and I know because I was looking a lot into the Maven program, which is something that the U.S. Army uses. But there's another thing with their involvement with predictive policing,
right?
Which it gets kind of into, and this is where the all-seeing eye of Palantir is just like, it's an interesting titling for a company, is kind of, it's like very Minority Report, like predicting the crimes before they happen type of a thing.
So if you go to the Verge article, this is an interesting part of this, right? So the initial value proposition was after 9/11, Thiel was saying, we have to do a better job at finding the terrorists. We can use data to find the terrorists. And so he sold it as, this is to help America become the predominant, you know, global superpower that can prosecute the war on terror. Therefore, not a libertarian, but maybe a little bit. It's hard to say. So he's got a weird political philosophy. Anyways,
he's Straussian.
It's like
he's a Leo Strauss guy. That's what he is.
He's a neocon. So that the Verge did this reporting on their efforts in New Orleans to do predictive policing. So this is something that they were using in Iraq to try to predict where improvised explosive devices might be, and then use that in shootings in New York and New Orleans using individualized data on American citizens. So the question here is what we didn't get here was actual, you know, Minority Report stuff where you're like actually going to prison for stuff you hadn't done yet. But it was to create leads for police before they could know what was going to happen.
Well, yeah, because that's what the project, I believe it's Project Maven, it might be one of the other projects, that was that the Army uses abroad for terrorist operations.
Yep.
Is it, and again, like this is how Palantir, their systems work, is that they make sure all the systems talk to each other. So it'll be like, it'll take satellite data and make sure that that's being cross-referenced with like human intelligence being brought in and dropped into the AI. And then also like what ground sensors are saying, mm-hmm. and it creates and a good,
data.
Yeah, it creates like an accurate picture of what is happening currently and what is, and then allows a prediction of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. That's how their systems kind of work. Like they're not the ones with the satellites gaining the satellite data. They're not mm-hmm. the ones with the ground sensors gaining the ground sensor data. They're not the one with the spy apparatus, like having spies give in that information. They're just synthesizing all the information together.
Yeah,
that's so kind of what their project or their programs do, their software programs.
So this is like in the X key score, which is the Snowden release from the NSA. This is the data it says it collects. From X key score. So that's probably, you know, augmented that plus military intelligence data. This is an overseas operation, so you don't need a FISA warrant. Keep that in mind. Collected communications not only include email, chats, web browsing traffic, but also pictures, documents, voice calls, webcam photos, web searches, advertising analytics traffic, meaning purchase data, mm-hmm. Social media traffic, botnet traffic, log keystrokes, computer network exploitation targets, intercepted username and password pairs, file uploads, online services, Skype sessions, and more. Mm-hmm. So that gets you a sense of the scale of data that they're able to bring in and create individual profiles for targeting on these on what might happen. Now, there's one thing to say. This is the sort of intersection in which someone would place an IED based upon our previously plotted mm-hmm. IED map versus using all this information that they have on American citizens to try to predict pre-crime. That's where the civil libertarian questions start to come in and be like, okay, well, wait, Palantir didn't say no to this. They said, yeah, we'll partner with New Orleans to try to predict policing. Now, the steel man of that is, well, we're not actually prosecuting anyone until they do the crime. But you also have the FBI setting people up for crimes mm-hmm. at the same time, right? So, like, these are all the same government doing these things. So, I understandably, people have their civil liberties alarms start going off, and they grow very concerned.
Yeah, the thing
about
with
the
that,
policy.
The thing with that though is like this technology will exist no matter what, regardless of who's doing it. The question is the policies around it.
Yes,
like that's the thing where like I think that Palantir gets a lot of this hatred. When it's like they're not the ones collecting your dick pics and then funneling it into the system. They're just the ones analyzing your dick pics. Right? Like that's
all right. Dick like pics. They didn't say dick ones. Pics in the list, but I believe that's probably one of the things they analyze.
But you said like Skype conversations and stuff like that, right? Like they're the ones that are analyzing the data that's brought to them. Mm-hmm. They're not the ones illegally gaining your data, right? Like that's the thing that I think people need to understand with this is like should the government be bulk collecting your Skype conversations? Should they be that's a different conversation than the technology that Palantir is using right now. These are separate conversations.
So they're related in this sense, in the same way that a shark and a remora fish mm-hmm. work collaboratively. So the shark kills the thing. It's the policy that actually does the bad thing. The remora fish profits off of it. And that's that leftist frame that confuses the corporation that enables the government to do something and the government policy. Now, the best leftists can distinguish between that and focus on the government. The worst just say Palantir and Elon and Thiel bad. And that's the distinguishment that I would make. Isn't that they're not separate conversations because these do have negative feedback loops, such as you reinforce and lobby for the thing, the policy that you want with your money and things like that in DC. That's a given, but that's given itself is – is one of the things that contribute to the systems we have.
Yeah, but so, like, it's like this technology also, this technology also allows hospitals to communicate their data with each other.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the thing where it's like, this is just a technology that is in use. It's like, I'm not blaming the creator of the technology. I'm blaming how you use the technology.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's like, I'm not really, it's like, Palantir, like, it doesn't, it's just like, there would just be a different company providing that technology if it wasn't them. Like, that's right, all, that's right. All I'm kind of saying. 100%.
There, right? If it was Lockheed Martin providing British Petroleum with insights about their customers, you know, I would be like, I don't like Lockheed Martin, but you know, because of the policies and the waste and the fraud and the abuse. Now, if Palantir is actually eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse, but I still don't like how they were charted out for Ukraine to help them out, or Israel, or, you know, whatever, or other governments like the UK with the National Health Service, I would still be like, well, I don't like socialized medicine, but I understand that they're trying to understand so that they can better do their work. Now, this is a great one. So all these liberals are really upset at Palantir. But what makes socialized medicine work to the degree that it works is how you arbitrage your money. You arbitrage your money based upon delay of care and prioritizing, arbitraging your list, your ordinal list of who's most important, who's least important. The best way to do that is with big data, right? The best way to do that justly is to take that smoker who refuses to go on a diet and put them low on the list. And that person who isn't a smoker, who does deal with his health issues the best they can and is actually prioritizing, high on the list, because they're actually a worthwhile investment. The same people who are super upset at Palantir are also the same people who want socialized medicine. Right? Well, Palantir is the tool you use to implement socialized medicine.
That is actually the thing. To make socialized medicine at all effective, you would need a system like Palantir to be able to track things, yes, appropriately, to be able to get more accurate predictions on what prices should be, to be able to do, right? Like, you would need that system in place. So it is funny. Like, that is just like a funny irony of this whole thing of, yeah, like, but that's another thing that just goes to show is like, no, they're not actually against Palantir software. They're against the people behind Palantir software and their connections to Trump. Uh-huh. That's what they're mad about.
Right. So this is the progressive delusion, right? Which is that we can get all the benefits of these things without having
to actually have the things
arbitrage, you know, without having all the systems that implement that thing. So yeah, you're right. It's that. So that's how they were used in the NHS, but they're also used by United Airlines and Lowe's and Tampa General Hospital and all kinds of other private businesses very regularly. And that I have no beef with, right? To understand your customer better, to better serve your customer using big data, no problem. Especially if the data is collected voluntarily through purchasing and selling of that data. Well, now, people could quibble about that, but I think largely, you know, purchase data off the internet that someone gives voluntarily and someone purchases voluntarily to assess that to understand your customer better, it seems completely reasonable.
Well, it's like, what would you rather have, ads targeting you that actually are things that you would want to buy, or would you rather just have like a bunch of random ads that you don't care about? Like, that's data management.
That's
what that whole is. Like, the reason why you get ads of something that you would actually like to buy is because the system is predicting who you are as a person.
I can't remember if I've ever talked about this on the podcast before, but I tell you about that time I deleted all my Google data.
Yeah.
As a social experiment. I don't remember if I've just told you or said on the podcast, but it was terrible.
Yeah.
Reason why, and sometimes I don't like it because it just assumes I have erectile dysfunction, which I don't. Google, stop it. Just because I'm 40 does not mean I have ED. But the ads I got were insane. They were just completely completely unuseful and not at all a good user experience.
Until it learns who you are, yeah. Which, but like, that's the thing is, like, this is kind of the thing with this, where it's just like, a lot of people are not, like, this technology can be used for good or be used for bad. And it's just like a matter of how it's used, like the policies around the technology or so on. Yeah. But it's like, do you want to just completely eliminate the technology? Do you want to just be a complete Luddite about it? You know, yeah. It's like, or it's like the same thing where you get that with all the, like, a lot of the crypto skeptics. They're always like, yeah, but central bank digital currencies is like, yeah, blockchains enable central bank digital currencies, but they also enable like Bitcoin.
Like, we should abolish money because central banks issue money.
Yeah, it's just like it doesn't. Which actually that raises another point. Another person, part of the PayPal mafia, David Sachs, When he was when he was in his like his conversation at the Bitcoin summit, the Bitcoin conference, a week or two ago, a big topic that he was talking about was decentralized identifications. So, like, what that would actually mean is that you would be able to actually like compile all of your data together and keep it private while being like selective on how your data goes out there via blockchain. And especially if we're talking about a Palantir system that's kind of like centralizing these systems together, that's just, if we're talking about like a combination of the centralized database that Palantir is designing and updating the IT work for the government, while also you being able to maintain kind of cryptographically your identification, like that's like the best of both worlds. It's like efficiency on the Palantir end while also like you having the privacy that's necessary. Like something like that is what should be fought for.
Right, right. Or, and strong legal protections for civil liberties, right? If getting those three seem reasonable effort, if you're going to take on the effort. Now, one of the other kind of clouds hanging over Palantir's head is that they were, they allegedly, during COVID-19, were using data to try to model who was infected and who wasn't. By April, according to the company, approximately a dozen countries were using this technology to track and contain the virus. That's from a website, I can't remember which one, that I was able to find. Now, they are also involved in Project Warp Speed, with the Tiberius platform, and in 2022, Palantir supported CDC case surveillance for a bunch of stuff. So this precedes, the COVID-19 thing, but they definitely redeployed their software specifically to tackle COVID-19 because that was a major Trump administration priority at the time, and they used Palantir to try to understand the virus and how it was spreading, all that kind of stuff. The real, like, I think the best criticism is in other countries, and I found no evidence of this happening in America, is where they're actually trying to model for that. And that's where you might have gotten, because they have worked with Australian Defense Services, spying on Australians to put them in camps.
Yeah, they had like sick camps.
Yeah, right. And people, I remember the videos when they're like, I don't think I'm sick. It's like, we have records that say you're sick, you know, yeah, we're going to test you.
Australia was wild.
Yeah. So, like, that could have been Palantir. And so, understandably, people are, you know, making this association crudely, and they're just saying these are the same thing, and that lies if Palantir's the one enforcing it. But no, they were the software provider to the Australian government to get them to do that.
And that's the thing,
but it's like the Australian government who's the shark.
That's the thing, is like they're the software provider, right?
Yeah.
It's like, just because people in the government use Excel spreadsheets, you know, it's
like exactly.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Like, yeah. How dare you use Outlook?
Yeah.
All right. So let's dig into a little bit more fine granular, because Palantir CEO has been getting a lot of coverage.
He's a wild boy.
He's a
strange
spicy
boy. So the first thing that started coming up to me, so Alex Karp is the CEO. He was Peter's roommate.
Yeah.
Back when they were in law school, I believe. I think that's where it was. This first video is, I want to paint a picture, like an overall picture of who this guy is, because there's like the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like it's kind of like a holistic picture of who this guy is.
Let's do this Picasso.
Yeah. So this first one is a recently Palestinian protester came up to him while he was at some conference or something like that, and kind of disrupted the whole thing.
That a few people get wealthy, and if you said platitudes that were obviously stupid, you could. Oh.
Killing my family in Palestine.
Yeah. And,
what
you know.
What kind of person are you? How do you sleep at night?
Well, if you,
on you.
Do you want to hear my answer?
Sure.
Okay. So, I think the primary cause of death to Palestinians.
That's not funny.
Okay. Do you want to, hear the answer, or do you want to yell?
For no reason.
Well, you don't want to hear an answer.
I want to hear
obviously. So, the primary source of death in Palestine is the fact that Hamas has realized that there are millions and millions of useful idiots that
stop
will.
Using that excuse. This is why you don't get a platform to speak. Because you are killing my people and you're justifying it because of Hamas or anyone else.
Can we get security up there?
I'll leave it there, but you kind of get the point. Is it's just like this happened recently. He's definitely much more on the Israeli side of this whole thing. He is Jewish, he was confronted at a thing by a Palestinian protester.
Yeah. So how should people who are skeptical of Israel's actions in Palestine relate to Palantir, Kyle?
I they sell a targeting system to, they sell AI targeting systems to the United States. So,
and Israel.
Yeah. So like, I guess that would be how,
yeah.
Like, but to me, again, this is one of those things where I go for the policy and like the policies and the actions being made rather than Palantir themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm not even really a person that even really just like blames, say, Lockheed Martin or something like that, and like the military industrial complex. Like, I'm much more just concerned about the policy perspective. Like I don't blame the gun manufacturer for selling guns to the government, mm-hmm. right? You know,
like, or to people, kind of, and someone uses it terribly, right?
Yeah, it's, yeah. Like a gun can be used for a mass shooting, right? Like, right. But like, I'm not blaming the gun manufacturer for that in right. that regard. Now, that being said, this guy is much more verbose in a lot of ways, where he is very much more kind of like genocidal tolerant sometimes. I've seen in sort of
yikes, Kyle,
in,
yikes.
In sort of in some like in like there's like also a separation of the CEO from the company sometimes there, where you're like, this guy's a wild boy. Like, well, I've seen some statements from him
also,
like,
noting that decisions are made by the CEO, mm-hmm. right? So if he has no personal moral boundaries for what he's willing to partner mm-hmm. with the government to do, you would hope that there would be a higher standard for, you know, who leads the company than that,
mm-hmm.
right? So he's like, yeah, we'll help you do predictive policing in New Orleans. Or, yeah, we'll help you target Palestinians. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's no boundaries, if it's anything the government wants to do is okay with me, well, that's kind of an impoverished standard, right?
Well, so like the predictive policing thing to me, like even that, it's like, let's say we're like living in libertarian fantasy land of like pure Ancapistan or something like that. There would be security services that are constantly updating their technology, and predictive policing would be a piece of that. Like, right. So like, I don't fault a company for developing some sort of software that helps with predictive policing. Like whether it's the government or like a private security firm that does it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's part of it's one, this was a completely secret relationship between the city police and Palantir that the people didn't know that their government was doing. Two, it's sure. it's not necessarily where the information's coming from really is important. Like, was it collected voluntarily or was it collected by fiat? Mm-hmm. That's fraud, right? Which would be illegal. Three, strong civil libertarian protections, I think, is what the standard people are shooting for is, right? And at least having a moral standard that you're holding your corporations to. It's like that libertarian fallacy that the left is always pointing to. It's like, you don't care about corporate power. It's like, well, no, I actually do. I think. Actually, I'm perfectly willing to criticize this guy as being a little incompassionate for a person talking about their family being bombed.
I don't like when I listened to that. Like, I felt like he was being compassionate enough to a protester like that. Like that's like there's something I hate. I hate as protesters is it doesn't matter what side they're on.
Yeah.
Like, emotional outbursts like that are very not useful for any conversation.
Sure. Right? Yeah. No,
like, it doesn't matter what side they're on. Like, that felt plenty compassionate in that regard to me in dealing with that person.
Yeah.
Right.
If someone tells me, no matter what the forum is, that their family is dying. And I respond with, well, you're just a useful idiot. Right. Like, that's once again, like, it's just a very impoverished standard for how we hold people to a moral standard, which is a prescriptive for how people ought to behave. I'm not observing right now how things work. I understand that's how things work, but how things ought to be. Right. And if they're saying like, no, I actually want my corporations to have a moral standard to be actually say no when the government says, I want your data or I want to do this thing, that is obviously a violation of your civil liberties.
Yeah. Like, I feel like there's a lot of different kind of conversations all coming into one thing where mm-hmm. it's like, it's hard to like pick each thing apart. Like,
right.
I'm still kind of at this point where I just like, they're a software company that's taking on contracts, right? Like, you know, like, should they just say no to this or that? Yeah, probably. Like, there's probably something to that. But like, I'm not going to like necessarily hate them for providing like targeting technology. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what they're.
Sure.
That's what their company is designed to do.
Yeah, right. Like, I would be
like,
fine
like,
with,
I, like
yeah.
I, there are certain individuals in the company where like, I think that like I have a, we'll get to a link here where he's talking about like the use of technology and he's kind of gloating for Palantir technology being used by European entities in order to stamp out right-wing political movements, right? Like, but like, that's a thing where it's like, yes, this is a thing. So like, he clearly, him as the CEO, and this is something where Peter himself probably wouldn't even be for, right? So this actually creates a distinction, because this guy is much more of a progressive liberal type, right? Very much so. Like, he's very like a kind of World Economic Forum adjacent type of figure, which I actually think that there's actually a bit of a dynamic there where like Peter is on one side of the spectrum and he's on the other side of the spectrum. And then, so they're able to put their feet in both doors kind of.
Like, well, it was obviously successful. Yeah. I mean, you can see how well they did during the Democratic administration.
That was the same thing that happened with FTX, where Sam Bankman-Fried was kind of on the left side. And then his, somebody in a C-suite was very much on the right side, and they both donated tons of money to both sides of the political aisle. But everybody pays attention to Sam Bankman-Fried when the other guy was also, he was like the fourth largest donor or something to the Republicans. So it's like, okay.
And I do want to note, because I didn't want to overstate it, the predictive policing thing, there was no prosecutions based upon pre-crime. It's just one of those things that people are worried about for their Fourth Amendment rights.
Yeah. But it's like if your job as a police force, like if you're ICE or if you're just whatever big city cop organization, is to stamp out cartels and stop out crime that's going on with drug running, human trafficking, things like that. Like, these types of systems are incredibly useful for that. Like, I would want my police force that's stopping crime to have systems in order to be able to stamp out cartels, right? Like, I would want that. I don't want to just be like, no, they can't have that because there could be other things that could be done with them. Like, I'm worried about the policy. If those are being turned on lawful abiding citizens, that's a problem. But if they're being used on cartels, I'm completely fine with it, right?
Yeah, right. To the degree that they're following a process that has like adversary court process, right?
Yeah. Like, that's kind of the main, because like, I keep feeling like this is the thing where on the libertarian side, where it's just like, there becomes this kind of like Luddite, nobody should have these systems ever kind of a thing. I was like, I don't even think in your perfect libertarian utopia that would be the case. Like, these systems would be very much used.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's definitely not where I'm at. Definitely. So he also engaged on defending Elon and Doge, which kind of synergizes with your first point about the question of the role they're actually playing, sans the New York Times article.
Well, and there's just kind of a reminder is that a lot of these tech people, they kind of fell under Trump. And despite him being this guy, Alex Carr, being this like hardcore lefty progressive, at least outwardly in past interviews prior to the last year, which there is kind of like a switch that, you know, you kind of feel like there's a switch
shift.
There. But it's also like they're trying to get contracts.
Yeah, right.
Like, but there's kind of that thing where he is, you know, he is still part of kind of the PayPal mafia orbit, right? So that's important to note.
What I don't like about what's going on is I just view this as, well, let's watch the Democratic Party commit suicide. And like, I've been a Democrat most of my life. I kind of view myself as outside it, but I don't like watching the Democrats just commit suicide. And what I see is, most of the country doesn't really, at this point, given the fraud, waste, and abuse we know is there, 90% of the country is like, get rid of that fraud, waste, and abuse. And I just view this as yet another example of the progressive left boxing themselves into a suicide dance. Now, what the progressive left should be doing is saying, okay, Elon, you're clearly the most qualified person in the world to do something like this. We want a dialogue with you about how you're doing and what are you doing. I don't believe that's actually what happened. And again, I like Elon. I know, I think he's obviously the most important builder in the
world. Then he just starts glazing Elon. But you kind of see the direction there.
Yeah, that is interesting because of his background as a leftist and kind of speaking the left from that perspective. But he's like a lone voice there, right? Yeah. He's like, there's no one with him on that.
The other thing is, this comes from the same at Squawk Box, I think, is at CNBC. This is him talking about, and I want to play two opposing clips here, because I think that they could be viewed opposing. One, where one is, I think what a lot of people in this audience would probably agree with, is him talking about it's not actually bigoted for Germans to like not want mass migration.
Yeah, right? I didn't know he said this.
But then I want to play a different clip that he did at Davos. So it's just kind of interesting, right?
Relate one of them to something you just said. You lived in Germany for half your life.
Yeah.
And there is a big debate going on about the politics in Germany right now. You're also Jewish. And there is support, and you've even seen it over the weekend. Marco Rubio and Elon Musk and others have been very supportive of the alt-right movement in Germany. While there have been questions about their association with some supporting Nazis and other things, I'm curious where you land on that.
I don't want to go into the technical weeds here, but the problem in Germany is that somehow the small portion of Germans that believe you cannot talk about migration without being a bigot, which is about probably 15%, 90% of them vote for the Green parties, have somehow tricked the larger parties into saying they will only vote for things if the far right doesn't vote with them, which basically, as a matter of pragmatic power, shifts all immigration policy to a small group of people that literally will not let you discuss the fact that Afghani immigrants to Germany have a 70x propensity compared to German population to commit certain kind of crimes. And that in the last couple of weeks, every single terror attack has been the result.
Did you go to jail for pointing that out?
You'll get into trouble, but this is the weird thing. There's a lesson in this book, which is do not allow yourself to become a product of people you may tacitly agree with. So, like, I'm sympathetic with non-discrimination. I don't believe in discrimination across any variable. But you are being turned into a product by a certain small sector of the left because you're not allowed to talk about facts. Like, in the last couple of weeks...
We can stop it there. Actually, that was the end. That's something that I like very much agree with as like a tactical point of view is like there's a difference between your allies and your like co-belligerents in any type of movement where it, like this is actually something that kind of what I was addressing there in the Palestinian thing. Like I'm somebody that's very skeptical of a lot of the Israeli influence in American politics, but I also can't find myself like just jumping on board with all the Palestinian protesters. Like, especially there was literally just a guy throwing Molotov cocktails at in Boulder, Colorado the other day, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're not even covering that. Who was a white guy named Muhammad, which was very interesting.
But converted.
He was like Egyptian, so I guess whiter skin maybe. But it was just like a thing where I was like, the terrorist suspect is Muhammad. It was just like a dude that looks like he could have been from like England.
Gotcha.
But that's kind of like he's making an interesting point there where it's just like you don't want to be completely defined by like the most radical elements of like the allies that you're with sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's just like there's a lot of people that are against the mass migration policies, but they're getting called bigots because they're lumped in with like actual Nazis, you know? But like people can be like, no, I don't want just massive immigration coming in and changing the country, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Well, it's pretty base of him, especially from the angle he's coming at it from. Because once again, he's very alone on that one.
But then there's this where you're kind of like, well, here's an interesting comment that you're making about Palantir's technology usage.
Look, we built PG, which single-handedly stopped the rise of the far right in Europe. We built Foundry, which was used to distribute the COVID vaccine and saved millions of lives globally. We built what we call multi-constellation and what's often called the digital kill chain. And they're category-defining products. So when you deliver these products to the market, just honestly, people say, this isn't going to exist, this isn't valuable. But then it changes the market. And then the market is the Palantir market. Now, that doesn't mean everyone in the world's going to buy our product. But it means most of the sensible people in the world are going to buy from the category we defined.
So in the beginning, he talks about the COVID thing, talks about the stamping out the right wing.
Yeah.
In Europe. Right.
No bueno. Okay. So
very specifically, he says the far right. I want to make that clear because like that is somebody he was kind of criticizing in that previous clip. So it's not as like disconnected as it might seem like.
Sure.
It is off rip.
The question is whether or not the tool that Palantir developed called PG, which is Palantir Government, which is the precursor to Gotham, whether or not that was instrumental in the censorship industrial complex in the EU. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it makes sense.
I think it's a very valid question.
And I did some looking around. I couldn't find anything that directly tied Palantir to the CIC yet. I think that we're going to see that come out soon because it wasn't a focus prior to this. I'm not going to be surprised if that connection happens because it makes sense. So what are some of the other products that Palantir offers beyond PG? Okay.
Well, some of the things, just to give like a holistic picture of what they do. And again, always keep in mind, like, Palantir's competitive advantage with the data stuff is making sure systems talk to each other. So like that's what all of these systems really as a purpose are doing. And then these are like the applications that are able to be used. So one is making it so that there's not like as much fraud in our bureaucracies. But then the other is things like Vantage Systems, used by the U.S. Army, manages data to help with AI modeling and predictive analytics, helps process logistics, predict supply chain problems, and analyze intelligence on threats. So it's like, you know, it's like another thing. Makes things more efficient because you have systems talking to each other. But then you get into things like Maven Smart Systems, which basically what this does is it fuses the data gathering analysis side with target identification. And this is where you get in kind of the, and this is used by the U.S. Army as well. And this is used for counterterrorism operations. So you can use satellite imagery, use ground sensors, use the intel from your spies on the ground and compile them all together. And then you get a holistic picture of like what's going on in the region, what's going on, like where the threats are suspected to happen. This is kind of like your predictive policing for terrorist threats, right? It's that.
One of the interesting things here is at the same time that the Obama administration was incorporating Palantir to the Department of Defense broadly in the Army and things like that, was when Obama with the CIA was doing his drone program, which we discovered in the drone program and specifically the files that really that leaked afterwards towards the latter half of it at the end of the Obama administration revealed that their targeting was so poor that they pretty much, in order to justify what they had, what they were doing, is they said, if you're an adult male over 16, you're probably a terrorist, so therefore we attack. So one of the things here too is and I think to note, I think from the optimist side, is maybe we're not actually as godlike in our ability to do these predictions as we thought we were too. Like, this could also be largely a feel-good thing that the government does, but maybe not as effective as we might think it is. Good question. I don't know, but that's something that just came to me just now thinking about that, because it can't be easy to know who in Yemen is who, right? I mean, like, they're one of the poorest countries in the Middle East. They don't have a lot of cell phones. I mean, imagine they have quite a few, but the amount of data robustness and availability might be limited.
Well, and it's also, as these technologies get more advanced, probably have a lot less civilian casualties, right? Because things become, like, your actual targeting systems become more crystal clear. Like, that's kind of the,
depending on the policy,
the good and the bad of of this, of like,
well, and this might be the most insidious part of it, because they do this sort of thing and it signals this incredible competence, but then they give it to the Israeli military and then they wipe out an ambulance team and they say 70% were Hamas, and the Western media goes like, oh, okay, 70% were Hamas, and then the video comes out and you see it happen and you're like, I'm not sure any of these guys are Hamas. They just look like regular dudes running for their lives. They're being shot down by the IDF. I'm not so confident anymore that maybe you're using this as a guise to justify the policy you wanted to do anyways. So,
or maybe the like those systems weren't in use for those types of operations,
regardless of what the policy is, right? Yeah. Maybe that would be even worse. They knew and they did it anyways. That would be even worse, right? If you have this granularity of trying to target who's who, but then you just decided to go on a mass killing spree anyways, that would be terrible.
Well, and that's the thing here, because like, I'm also just thinking, like, going back even 8 years, I don't know how good this technology was, because everything's so exponential.
Right.
Because the Titan Tactical Intelligence Targeting Access Node, which is still an early stage AI targeting system, has just been delivered from Palantir to the military for like two systems were delivered this March. Mm-hmm. So we're still in like the early phases of like this new AI revolution on things for the targeting systems right now. Mm-hmm. So it's like they probably had some like AI models for targeting systems before, but they probably were not.
That was the alpha version?
Yeah, they're probably not great. Well, it's like it seems like this Titan here is like an alpha version. Because, like literally there's just two systems available that were delivered in March 2025. So this is like really recent tech. But what it is it like triangulates all the data of satellites, drones, everything coming together for you to have a holistic picture for your guns to target automatically.
Right? Now, is that the same thing as the Titan vehicle? In the vehicle?
I think that's something that's in the vehicle because so they have the RCV program, which is robotic combat vehicle program, which is autonomous vehicles, like autonomous land vehicles. And I think what you might be thinking is there's probably some sort of
cross brand.
Like
they developed the software and they're like, that name is so good, we're going to name the vehicle that too.
Yeah. And what these are is like, they're used for like vehicles for logistics, plans to use them for direct combat. So you like literally have vehicles going in, you know, on their own. So we are in the Skynet robot.
Bring up the website
stuff.
So they can see it. Cause it's actually really quite, it's crazy looking.
Yeah.
And how it describes itself, I think is insightful to it. So this is a program with Northrop Grumman, I think we found.
There's just a bunch of partners. There's like a dozen of different groups that are involved in this.
Right.
Here's
freaky boxy military truck thing. So go down a little bit. Yeah. The description right there.
As the first software prime, Palantir. Palantir is delivering a novel AI-defined vehicle to provide deep sensing capability that will enable long-range precision fires for the modern battle space. Titan is the Army's next-generation intelligence ground station, enabled by artificial intelligence and machine learning, and represents a first-of-its-kind modernization program. Hmm. So, yeah, this is probably some sort of... I imagine for the Titan targeting system and this, it's probably like the combination of that and the robo vehicle program.
Right.
Look at that boxy vehicle. then there's also things like, again, data integration. They have Envision, which is basically, it brings the Air Force, Space Force, and NORAD, NORTHCOM, all brings in their systems all talking together, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you no longer need, because like, that's the thing is like, we have all these different military departments, and it's always like a critique is like, well, was the FBI talking to the CIA? Yeah.
Department of Homeland Security to fix that problem, which it totally did.
No, Palantir's fixing that problem, right? That's kind of the thing. So like, when we're talking about defense at home with everything that NORTHCOM covers, which is North America, is like, okay, they're actually going to be using Space Force and the Air Force and like coordinating that data together in a more sophisticated way than they were before. Because that's kind of the thing is that they got to keep updating the systems. We can't be constantly living in the 90s with our equipment, right?
Right.
With how our computers speak with one another.
They also have a pretty cool spy suitcase thing that I found.
Yeah, the Sky Kit.
You just look at it, you're like, that could do some shit. That could do some crazy stuff.
I think
stuff.
It's like remote hacking.
Whoa.
I think is what it is.
I know those screens got to be fake, but that's so cool.
it does look like this was like rendered by an AI kind of, and or just like
computer generated software.
Yeah.
Yeah.
fully disconnected intelligence center powered by Palantir software. Palantir Sky Kit. I want a Sky Kit.
Sky Kit.
Is designed to empower users to conduct their edge workflows in areas with degraded network power and communications. Powered by Palantir's Meta Constellation and Sensor Interface Platform software, Sky Kit enables users to collect and analyze their data from anywhere, no matter their operating environment. So I think it like helps you work when like a scrambled environment, probably.
Yeah, or if you're like need to hack something and you're in, you know, Djibouti.
Yeah. If you got to hack Djibouti.
Yeah.
But like all that being said, so like just to kind of that
they
kind
also
of
have drone swarms software stuff, and they have Predator platforms, right? So like long range Predator platforms. So they've had that one for a while, and that's in a lot of demand. So yeah, there's so much hysteria on this. Where are people at? I need to know where Alex Jones is first.
Oh, I was sorry. I was pulling up the why is.
Everyone is giving you a bad.
I'm not logged into my account. Now I have to see Alex Honnold be like, hey, do you like TradingView? I was pulling up. We'll get to the Alex Jones here in a second.
Okay.
But I was just pulling up where everybody's at right now.
Oh, this is one of the reasons why it's in the news too much too, is how much the stock has blown up.
Yeah. So Palantir's stock is up like from election day. Let me just pull election day was here.
Yep.
If you're pulling up from there, it's up 260%, 250% right now. If you bought in the week up to election day, I mean, it's probably a good buy because you understand the relationship between Palantir and Trump.
Yeah. Right? So and that's like, through J.D. Vance and through his previous contracts the last time he was in charge of the presidency.
Yeah. And that's kind of the core thing here is like, I think a lot of the reasons why you're supposed to hate Palantir, unlike everybody else, is there's finance corporate contract games going on here. Like people are trying to ruin the reputation of Palantir for the sake of this other organization right now. Cause like,
what are the odds that the New York Times article was placed by somebody from Gorthrum Rumman or something?
Yeah. Well,
like that,
so right? like,
or, you know, Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, like, well, it's just like I even labeled, like, here's a bunch of people that
Northrop
make
Grumman.
Yeah,
I could not get that word out.
Here's a bunch of organizations that make, like, I just put a few in here, and then I put et cetera on top of it. So it's like there's plenty of organizations that get way more revenue and have way bigger market share than Palantir does here. Booz Allen Hamilton, Snowflake, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Casey International. Like, these are all organizations that get these big government contracts when it comes to AI, when it comes to the robo-vehicle stuff, when it comes to but it's like, we're supposed to hate Palantir. Like, we're supposed to hate Peter Thiel. Like, that's the thing where I get a little like, okay, there's bigger games that are being played here. It's not just that. And that was actually kind of the Alex Jones article that you teased up there, Dave, is I saw a lot of hate for Alex Jones online for being like, oh, he's a Palantir apologist. And a lot of people probably think that about me today, too.
I think you have a pretty balanced view. Saying there's civil liberties concerns, but you have to address the policy, right?
Yeah, it's like the policy, not the technology.
That's the most completely reasonable position.
Where I saw a lot of people being like, oh, Alex Jones is controlled by Palantir. He's controlled by Peter Thiel.
Oh, really?
And it's like, and it's for this clip, which is just interesting.
That's how he lost all the weight was Palantir.
Well, and especially he's like, this is also like, it should maybe like moderate your opinion of Alex Jones a little bit, because he's not the guy being like, they're all in it. It's like, you know, like,
he's not doing what you'd think Alex Jones would do with this news.
Alex Jones has always been pretty clear that there are factions in this game.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever followed him at all or listened to him talk about this stuff, it's not just like it's one big gigantic cabal. It's that there are factions going to war with each other behind the scenes and stuff. And this is kind of, which is kind of like where I'm at on a lot of stuff. I talk about the factions all the time. Like, I talk about that when I talk about like the New York Fed versus the San Francisco Fed or the Europeans or something like that. Like, these are different banker factions at all. Odds here. And that's kind of what the point is here with Palantir.
Everybody's asking me about Palantir. And when you look at it and you understand it, Palantir and the surveillance systems and the AI and all of it has been an outlier from the bigger companies. And it's been wanting to get big contracts. And Trump wants to use it to track illegal aliens and stuff, and the real ID that they're trying to bring in that's terrible, that never got implemented because it's unconstitutional. So I've been critical of all of that, and I obviously don't trust Palantir and the rest of the stuff it's doing. But it is small compared to all the other big AI and the Pentagon, Sentinel, and all the rest of it. The reason you're seeing the attacks on it everywhere is because it's trying to get contracts that other big tech companies already have, and because Palantir has been supportive of Trump. And so, yeah, Trump is going to them because they've been supporters. But all this hype about Palantir, all of these systems can be used for control. All these systems are out of control. All the AIs are woke. So Palantir is being used to run AI drones killing people in Gaza. All of it's very concerning. But why do people know about Palantir and nothing else? Well, that's because it comes from the left only focusing on Palantir, because it's seen as something being brought in to surveil the government itself and to try to find ways for fraud abuse. That's what Trump wants it for. Trump admin tasked Palantir with expanding U.S. surveillance state. And the New York Times and all of them are all over it. Palantir's deepening government ties sparked fears.
Then he goes into talking about what we've been talking about. Yeah. But like,
well, I'm glad to know that Alex Jones sees it the way we do.
Yeah. Well, it's like this is the thing. It's just like when I read the article, it was like, okay, Palantir is going to help fulfill the Doge agenda. Like that's
how dare they?
That was what I read. And it's like, there are these concerns about what the technology can be used for, in the same way where it's like, you know, we talked about AI last episode, where like there's concerns to be had with AI. Mm-hmm. Like, there are, it's not like most things in the world aren't all good or all bad.
No, like, it should be simple. I should be able to say
it should be very black and
company
white.
Company good, easy. Company bad, easy. Yeah. No? No, it's people and companies and governments and all these things are both.
Most things, right? In the world are very nuanced.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of what I guess that's kind of like the point that I've been trying to get on the podcast for a long time on a lot of different topics. It's just like, you know, everybody can, you can have like your certain views about like this thing, but like understand there's like a more holistic picture to be looking at this. It's not just like, you know, whatever your ideological trend is, like, I'm supposed to hate this person, I'm supposed to really like this person. It's like, mm-hmm. Have some nuance in your life.
And that's what the media misdirection is it's trying to set up a simple, this company bad, and then not mention all the other companies. That's like a completely legitimate criticism of the current environment and the underlying motives of why people are engaging in the Palantir hate at the moment. That said, it doesn't mean that there isn't legitimate criticisms of Palantir or of the government's use of Palantir and what they're doing with it.
I wish I remembered. I saw this tweet thread from a former Palantir employee that was laying out, that was actually responding to this article. Wish I remembered who that was, but it was like a very good kind of. You know, when I was working at Palantir, I would lay out criticisms all the time. And that's like the environment is you're very much allowed to lay out criticisms about like things that you agree or disagree with that the company is doing with. And like, they're very open to that, which is kind of interesting in itself.
Can it's you
like,
do that's that at culture. Lockheed Martin, you think?
Yeah, that's like a thing. But then the person went through and was like, well, the New York Times article says this, but it's like, that's just not even how that works. Like the New York Times article says this, but like, that's also just like there in, you kind of just realize like anybody that knew what they were talking about in the thing is just like the New York Times is literally just like clickbait shit posting. Like yeah. That's kind of what the whole article was,
but it shaped the internet this week. And cause it was right timed. There's a lot of people who are frustrated with the Trump administration right now for many, many reasons across a large, like promises he said hasn't fulfilled yet. Things he said it would be easy turned out to not be so easy. Stuff that people around him said they do, thinking of Dan Bongino and Kash Patel, and their comments have really, I mean, there's a lot of people right now who are very frustrated with the Trump administration, understandably, who, you know, just needed another push on the Trump administration not following through or doing something that, you know, they would be worried about, because those exact same people are also worried about Fourth Amendment stuff. It's just the key of not getting caught in that is to remember who sets the policy. Is it Palantir or the government? And it's ultimately the government's doing that. So if you're going to do this and you're going to constrain it, you have to focus on the policy into that. And for that, you need Congress. And by focus on policy, this is what really drives me the craziest. By focusing on Palantir, you're giving Congress a way out. You're giving them cover to do nothing about the very dynamic that they've set up repeatedly with NDAAs, the Patriot Act, ending Smith-Mundt. All these things are all things that created the censorship industrial complex whose blowback is one of the reasons Trump won. If Palantir was involved in that, you know, that's up to the policy to change. And ideally, Trump is part of that. Hopefully, there's some focus being put on there. We're not seeing any wins on those like policy change fronts.
Sounds like Ron Johnson has some really good DOGE rescissions coming from what I saw. Yeah. So I just saw that this morning. So that's interesting.
We'll see.
To be partnered with the Big Beautiful Bill, the BBB. but we'll it's also just like, be wary of, you know, when we're talking about these granular games of these huge companies and intelligence operations and geopolitics and how all this new technology is forming, be wary of overlapping psyops. Everybody's psyoping everybody. Everybody's trying to control, like do narrative controls on everything. And it feels to me that I'm watching a lot of people in the Trump camp really fall into this, Palantir's competition are psyoping anti-Palantir like propaganda
sentiment,
and people
right.
are just falling into that psyop, which is like, yeah, and like you can be critical of Palantir, that's fine, but it's just like the hyper fixation that I'm seeing all of a sudden people just like going in on Palantir that are from like the Trump camp is like a notable thing to watch right now. Like you just see, because I was telling you, David, before we started, was like, I'm going to obfuscate this a little bit, but like I was ragging on how much I hate Forbes as a journalistic outlet, whereas like I know a guy who his company that he created, their entire company model was basically psyoping Forbes journalists for positive or negative financial news to move markets. And it's like anytime you see anything that's like finance related in media, just assume it's propaganda. Like you should assume 99% of the time it's propaganda.
Yeah.
Like and that's kind of what I'm seeing with this Palantir story right now, is we're seeing this meteoric rise of a hyper growth company right now that's happening. And we're watching all the incumbents kind of freak out about it. Mm-hmm. That's actually what I think is going on here. Not all this other stuff around it.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the dual side of this, is that you can say that while still being concerned about the government policies. What I wanted to do with this podcast was try to elevate the government policy side of it and be like, yeah, I get it. You don't like Palantir, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is what the government's doing with Palantir and focusing on that. And I think if people do that, if the Trump administration and people around the Trump administration focus on that, then they're in a good space. They can keep their coalition together. But as long as they are, allow themselves to be distracted by this by hating on companies rather than the government, they're going to find themselves in the same place the leftists are always at, which is just this company good, this company bad, or just not mentioning the companies that you don't that are currently incumbents.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you said, like nobody cared about Palantir when it was Obama.
Yeah.
Like nobody cared about Palantir kind of before he became a Trump fan. Mm-hmm. Like it's worth reminding people is that he used to be on the board at Facebook and he got kicked off the board for being a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
That's worth remembering, is like that is what kind of the Silicon Valley tech culture was here. And like Palantir or Peter got very was not very well liked amongst a lot of the lefty tech elite at the time. And so much so that I think what was the story? He eventually ended up leaving Facebook. I think Mark Zuckerberg decided to let him stay on and was like, no, we need diverse opinions here on the board. And everybody's like, how dare you, sir?
Yeah.
That's what the story was, if I remember right. But yeah, it's just kind of like, remember, like there's games being played on, like there's like billionaire games that are happening right now.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I think that's it. Thank you so much for watching Human Reaction. Really appreciate you sticking with us till the end. If you are still here, you should be a member. You should join. Go to humanreactionpod.com where you can sign up for our SCIFs, our Secure Containment Information Facility exclusive episodes. Get the entire backlog of all the crazy stuff Kyle's brought together for us.
Last week, we did a crazy deep dive on the Brigitte Macron story.
Yeah.
the conspiracy around it.
It's a fun time. So if you want access to that and many others, and join our Discord. We've got a lot of people there from the Spotify to YouTube, all those audiences coming into one place to chat about the show and give us feedback and drop us stories and stuff. Definitely check it out. Thank you so much for watching. Peace.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.